them. And then, and he teaches mostly, as we heard last week, with stories. He tells short stories called parables. And that's how he helps people learn and helps people to take these little stories and ponder them in their heart until they sink in and they understand what they're about. And eventually, he and his group of disciples go from town to town to town telling these stories. And who does he encounter? I want to tell you a few stories of the people he encounters. On his way through Samaria, where the Samaritans live, and the Jews and Samaritans didn't particularly get along too well. They're walking into town one day, and the disciples go on to get food, and Jesus is tired from teaching and walking, and he stops by a well just to sit and rest. It is the heat of day, probably around noon, and a woman comes out to get water. Now, this is quite unusual in itself because women always came out together early in the morning when it was cool to get their water for the day, but this woman was on her own, so obviously she was an outcast from her own community. And she comes out to the well, and she must have paused to see Jesus sort of sitting there, and she comes up to the well tentatively, and Jesus said, Could you please give me some water? And she says, whoa, you're a Jew. Jews don't speak to Samaritans and they don't speak to women. And you are asking me for water? And he said, if you knew who I was and you wanted water, I would give you the water of life from the spring of life. And she said, what is this? What is this water? I want this water. And so they talked for a while, him asking her about her life and her husbands, which turned out to be four of them, and the one she is with now isn't her husband. And they have this conversation to the point where she understands that Jesus is the Messiah, and she takes the story back to her community and tells them about it, and they begin to follow Jesus as well. Her life is so incredibly transformed in that conversation that when she goes back, something is different in her that they are willing to listen to. Somebody who is an outcast in society. And another time, a leader of a religious group called the Pharisees comes to Jesus at night. For some reason, he doesn't want to be seen with Jesus. Most of the religious leaders did not want to be seen with Jesus. His name is Nicodemus, and he says, I don't know if you're the Messiah or not, but I came to see for myself. And Jesus speaks again with Nicodemus and says, you know about the things you know about, but I know of spiritual things. And you, first of all, who are born of human flesh, also must be born of the Spirit. And Nicodemus was puzzled by that and went away wondering what Jesus meant. Another time, a very rich tax collector, who is also very short, climbed up into a tree in the town Jesus was going through because he really wanted to see Jesus. How very undignified of a rich man to climb up in a tree. But when Jesus saw him and how much he wanted to see him, he called out, come on down, I'm going to your place for lunch. And he did. And they had a party. And even his disciples were grumbling. Jesus hangs out with sinners. But Zacchaeus, the man in the tree, was so transformed by their conversation and Jesus coming to his place that on the spot he was inspired to say, I will give back half of everything I have taken, half of my wealth to people. That's the effect that Jesus had on people. Another time, a centurion who is a leader of a group of soldiers came to Jesus in front of his disciples and said, my servant is very ill. Can you do something about it? I believe that you are a leader. Now, this was a Roman soldier. He was not in favor with anybody, really. And Jesus said, I'm going to come with you to heal your servant. And he said, no, you don't even need to do that. I know you are a man of power, as I am. You just have to say the word and something will happen. And then, just then, another of his servants came and said, he's healed. He's up. He's well. Such a diverse, strange group of people that Jesus went to and spoke to, that it's hard to put them together and understand why. But these are the stories of Jesus we find in our ancient scriptures. Thanks be to God for the stories. So, what would you do if you were convinced that you had some astounding wisdom or knowledge that would significantly change people's lives? What would you do with that? That you knew the truth that would actually change the world if people really understood that truth at its deepest level. That in fact, that it was the way that God wanted the world to be, for people to live, and it would be incredibly good news for everyone. What would you do? You'd want to tell everyone about it. You'd want to get the word out. And you try to get this word out in the best way you knew how. So the best way to do that is to start a school or a movement that carries this news out into the world. First of all, what you would do is you'd find a small group of people who wholeheartedly bought into and immersed themselves in this message and this lifestyle. People who were invested in your ways of teachable and loyal. And you'd pass on to them everything you, your students or disciples, learning what you had to share with them. And you'd spend a lot of time with them practicing and learning this way of life and this knowledge. They would follow you and learn from you and take on your teachings as their own. And then when they were ready, or you thought they were ready, they would go out and practice what you were teaching them. And then after they'd practiced for a while and they knew what they needed to know and you felt that you were able to do this, you would go out into the world and you'd go out to other people and you'd share with them what you were offering. And you'd find the people who were in need of what you were offering. And if you're a charismatic, convincing leader and teacher offering what people really need, some people are going to listen to you and then they're going to follow you. And your movement will then grow. You will have convinced some of those people that things can change and that they can be a part of the change. And when there's a groundswell of people following you, the world will begin to change. And that's exactly what Jesus did. And this is what every great leader, great in quotations, in history has done. Movements actually require people who sign on to something that they believe in so wholeheartedly that they begin to change their minds and their lives to follow someone or something that they fervently believe in. Jesus, Siddhartha Gautama, who eventually became the Buddha, Muhammad, Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and many others throughout history. These are positive examples of great leaders who have led movements for good. And of course, the opposite of true is true. There are those charismatic leaders who have led people down paths that were, at the very least, misguided, sometimes evil. Anybody have names for these people? Hitler, always comes first. Stalin. Mussolini. Jim Jones. Putin, Fidel Castro. We can name lots on either end, right? But what these leaders all have in common is that they were able to convince people that what they offered was something that they needed or wanted. Every one of them were convincing. And of course, now we know that these two groups diverged very much on their ideas and philosophies. The first group offered something that actually truly would benefit humankind and all humankind and advance the well-being of all people, while the second group offered the very opposite, destructive, life-destroying systems that benefit mostly those who have the power. Movements can only start when people buy whatever is being offered. It's the only way movements will start. And people can be persuaded of anything if they are convinced that it benefits them. So what did Jesus offer that was so convincing that the Christian movement has grown to be not only the largest in the world, but is arguably changed the world more profoundly than any other movement in history? What did he offer? Well, he offered a vision of the world where all people are valued and treasured for exactly who they are. Where love and forgiveness is the nature of God, and that no matter who we are loved and forgiven. And he taught that caring for our neighbor is everyone's responsibility. He also proclaimed that each of us contains within us the kingdom of God, and that inner peace as well as peace in the world is possible if we really want it. And this was a radical idea for that time. He told people that it isn't how much they have or how much they do that gives them their value. They're simply valued because God loves them. Now, in Jesus' day, you were considered blessed if you were wealthy and had lots and had an abundant family and any kind of wealth, or things were going well. But if things weren't going well for you or you were poor, that was a curse. God didn't love you. Jesus changed that mentality. In an age of fear and destruction and grinding poverty, people heard that they were loved by God, and they found hope in that. Because in Palestine, in Jesus' day, it was a hotbed of unrest. It was seething with political revolution, discontent, warfare, crucifixions by the Romans. There were a multitude of false prophets, corrupt politicians, religious leaders who were corrupt, false teachers, and splinter groups who were trying to overthrow the government. Sound familiar? Still going on. The powerful and the wealthy, a small elite group of people, supported Rome, while most people in Jesus' time were oppressed and poor in Israel. And in this system, you were considered inferior if you weren't successful. Many sects or movements thrived in this time. What Jesus' message offered was that God's love was for all people, which even the Jewish people didn't believe in Jesus' day. He didn't offer God's love for just some. He offered it for everyone. And no one is better than another. The woman at the well was as valued as the highest religious leader. A wealthy man who was a tax collector and hated and reviled was as important as a Roman emperor. A woman caught in adultery was as important as a king. That's what Jesus taught. One could see that Jesus' message was unlike any other message in history. It did and does today not play any favorites. It opened people to the possibility that God was bigger than they thought, and that everyone, not just religious people, could be loved by God, even the least and the lost. The key, hear this, the key to his successful movement, was the people he offered the message to. He offered it to people who knew their need. Those who were vulnerable and lost, seeking and yearning, and had nothing to lose and everything to gain. He moved among people as one who truly had compassion for them and wanted to see them restored to health and fullness of life. He broke all social taboos by speaking with women, by healing lepers, by tending to those who were mentally ill and to the social outcasts. That's who he came to. Not the people that great leaders would normally recruit or even think about when they're starting a movement. It worked because it was a grassroots movement. Because the people had nothing to lose and everything to gain, they were grateful for what he offered and became fiercely loyal to his message and to his lifestyle. And they're still doing it today because he offered something that was truly transformative. He offered them a life of freedom and hope, of community and care. And he offered them a new vision of what God wanted for the whole world, for all people. It was not a political system with a ruler who ruled over them, but a community where people cared for and loved each other, where peace comes in the form of people selflessly giving, forgiving, and sharing with each other. And it was a way of life where everyone was provided for. That was the early Christian community. And his vision for the world caught on because it included the humble, those who had the least. He made people believe that he loved them and that God loved them. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the poor in heart, for they will see God. These are the things he taught people. It was a new message altogether. Jesus knew people what people needed, and he offered it to them. And he still offers it today. Blessed are those who are willing to admit that they have need, for they will be healed and be made whole. It's not the exalted or the arrogant or those who are too blinded to see that they have need, but the lonely, the unlikely, and lost who Jesus went to because they knew they were wounded and broken and needed what he had to offer. So what about us? Does the Christian message still resound in our hearts today? Perhaps it's not sticking with people because we are satisfied with what we have. The message comes to those who admit that they have a need, that they are wounded or lost or broken. What do we need? What do you need today that Jesus offers? Are we willing to be vulnerable enough to admit it and ask for what we need? Blessed are those who do. Let's take a moment for reflection.